Hi, this is Jan Korb with Broadbase Communications, and you're listening to DrawnBySuccess.com.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of DrawnBySuccess.com. I'm Carlos Castellanos, and I'm here with my pal, Bob Ostrom.
How are you, Carlos?
I'm doing fantastic, sir. What about you?
I'm doing great. Hey, we've got a guest today.
Yes, we do.
You want to introduce her?
Yes, absolutely. She's an old friend of mine, Jan Korb. We met probably, I guess, like 18 years ago or so. She used to be an art director over at the Mutual Funds magazine. And she's since then, you know, kind of started on her own and has her own full-blown agency, and I really wanted to talk to her about the path that she took to get there. A lot of us creative freelancers a lot of times struggle with delegating some work, you know, handing stuff off to other people.
Right, and understanding how to grow our business and that kind of thing, too.
Absolutely, and I've seen her growing through the years, and she's done a phenomenal job. And so we're here with Jan Korb from Broadbased Communications. Jan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for the invitation. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic this morning.
Jan, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started and to the point where you were like, when I met you doing the art directing for magazines, and then how'd you take that leap from that to where you are right now?
You know, I graduated from Ringling School of Art, and I was on their website recently, and I see now that they offer classes in business, you know, and how to run studios. And I think that's fantastic because I certainly didn't have anything in my toolbox except for, you know, that graphic design degree, which didn't really qualify me for starting or running a business. I'd been designing magazines for about 9 years and had pretty much done everything in that field that I could do at the time. The last publication was a launch of a national magazine and was able to work with all sorts of incredible talent, such as yourself. And at that point, I pretty much felt like I had reached the pinnacle of that career and wanted to find something else to do. And I had a little nest egg saved of about $10,000, and I thought, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'm just going to go take the leap. And so I moved to Jacksonville and hung out a shingle, if you will, and the work just it came. And I started out just on my own. It was only me. I chose Broadbased Communications for the name because I wanted to choose a name that I would grow into. Instead of something like Jan's House of Art, you know, I wanted to sound something corporate that maybe one day Coca-Cola would be comfortable working with Broadbased Communications. So that's how it started. It was just a leap of faith and a lot of guts and a feeling that, you know, if it didn't work, that I could, you know, easily, hopefully, go get a job somewhere.
Now, was it something that you did you envision when you first started that you were going to grow this thing into a multiple person agency, or did you see yourself just as a one person agency and just kind of growing it?
You know, I don't even think that I had thought that far along. I like to say I make it up as I go along every day. I was making it up as I went along then, and I'm making it up as I go along 17 years later. I've made probably every possible mistake there is to make. So I've got that rich history. evolving and becoming whatever it is that my clients need for me to become.
All right. So in the beginning, you mentioned you had some money saved up and it took, you know, some risk and investment on your part. What were some of the things that you had to invest in those early days?
Computer equipment, printers, basically hardware and software, you know, because you get used to using a suite of software and enjoying, you know, some pretty nice equipment when you're employed by somebody else. And then if you wanted to start your own thing, you have to purchase all of that stuff on your own. And it's kind of shocking how much all of that actually costs to get set up. And furniture also. I have to laugh as I think back. You know, I had a borrowed kitchen table that I was working off of, I needed some counter space, and so I got 2 used filing cabinets and a 12-foot piece of countertop at Home Depot, and that was my office.
That's pretty much what all art school graduates do, I think, when they start freelancing. I remember having the same setup in California when I was freelancing out there. Okay, so you were working out of your house?
Actually, I was designing a magazine for a friend. It was called Jacksonville Woman at the time. And I had a pretty cool setup. I had been designing it out of Fort Lauderdale in between my full-time job. I think it was quarterly. And so I came to Jacksonville and I traded her space in her office. And she had a house set up. It was an office, but it was an old house. So I traded her 4 issues of design for all overhead. So I had free office space, free telephone, and even a lady that answered the phones and took care of people that came in the front door. So that was probably my smartest move, was to trade out for that.
That's a wise way to partner up with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is the big hurdle. Is at what point did you decide, okay, I'm busy enough, or I want to get busier, and I need some help? I'm assuming at this point as you got busier, you brought freelance people on. But at what point did you decide to maybe make your first full-time hire?
Well, when I was getting going and gaining clients, really I was working 12, 14 hours a day to manage everybody. At that point, when I was working for publications, I had assistant art directors. So I knew how to delegate and I was comfortable with it, but it's finding the right kind of talent. To this day, I have the same challenges when I hire designers. Is, you know, we need to have the same concepts and the same style, I guess, of design. So I didn't know who to outsource to at that point for creative. So I kept all the creative in my own inbox. But the things that I first outsourced were some of the things that I was no good at. Like bookkeeping. that was the first thing I outsourced. And I teamed up with the CPA firm at the time. And I tried the whole QuickBooks thing. And I'm like, you know, I went to art school. I don't know anything about this. I'm no good at this.
I feel your pain there.
Math is not my thing. And it's still not. So I teamed up with the CPA firm. And I was, you know, it was just me. But I found a firm that was more than happy to work with me and was looking forward to helping the business grow and to go along with me. And they're still my CPA firm. And so they set it up very simple for me. And they gave me a list of items that once a month I had to send over to them. And they'd magically do whatever needed to be done and, you know, send me the reports back. So I got rid of that really fast. So I outsourced things that I was not good at.
A lot of things that I hear people complain sometimes about outsourcing, or even, you know, getting other people to even do the books and stuff like that, is that, well, you know, I can't afford it, or it's extra money.
You can't afford not to do it because the amount of time that I might sit struggling, trying to go through QuickBooks and get everything organized in the right place, I might spend 4 hours doing that, but that's 4 hours that I could have been billing, you know? Right. So it's pretty much a no-brainer when you look at it on paper that way.
How long did it take you before you hired your first person?
It was probably about 2 years. And I hired a young woman who was interning at the magazine. And her name was Melissa Jun. And she was very talented. She had a degree in writing. So she was doing editorial work. And one day she came to me and said, I want to show you my portfolio. And she had an amazing portfolio. I said, I can't believe you're spending all your time writing when you could be doing this. So I hired her. And I moved into my own office space and brought Melissa along and delegated work to her, you know, production work. And she was with me for several years. And at one point I just said, you know, Melissa, you need to go get trained professionally somewhere. And she did. And she went to the Portfolio Center and she ended up working at Pentagram in New York. So she was my first success story.
It must have taken a lot of courage to find somebody and then to hire them, because that's a pretty big commitment. You know, I think about like the financial commitment, especially. How did you deal with that?
Gosh, you know, that's a really difficult question, because it's I deal with the same thing on a daily basis now, trying to make hiring decisions. I guess there was just so much work on the books, and to learn how to forecast the business coming in really is a great way to help you make these business types of decisions. So if you can sit down and, you know, with a 12-month calendar in front of you, like an Excel spreadsheet, and try and forecast how much work is coming in that you have on the books that you should be working on every month. What's the dollar value of that work? And then also know that your phone's going to ring and you're going to add to that, you know, as you go along. But if you can look out and see that in May, June, July, you have so much work that's coming in that you can plan for, it makes it easier to make that commitment to hiring somebody. And then once you hire them as an employer, I don't know about anybody else, but you know, that's my biggest incentive to do well, is because I want to keep those people and I want to maintain their livelihoods and provide jobs for them. So it's I don't think there's any real formula. It's kind of gut combined with a little bit of grown-up forecasting.
So how do you find these people? I mean, when you're looking for somebody to hire, what are you looking for?
For hiring designers, there needs to be an incredible portfolio, no prima donnas, absolutely right. No prima donnas. I was trained in the Swiss style, so I prefer that. That clean design. So I look for that in the portfolio. But I think the biggest thing I have to say is, you know, somebody that loves design and not a prima donna. I really reject that type of personality in the studio.
Yeah. So you're looking for somebody who's not afraid to get their hands dirty, get in there and help when you need it.
Definitely. I wish I would have said that.
Nicely put.
You
Bob.
Did. That's what I'm here for.
Jan, do you have a lot of people submitting mailers to you? And I know you work with illustrators and photographers and just about everyone under the sun. So is there anything that you look for in submissions when you don't actively have a position available or a specific job or project that you're looking to fill?
You know, you never know when I have a job to fill or a project to fill, because I tend to make things happen around people that impress me. So if I don't have a specific job to fill, but somebody comes to me and they just have, you know, and they're an amazing talent and just seem to bring so much to the table, I might create a job. You know, people don't know what I have available, because it's, you know, you're making it up as you go along. And, you know, we have, as business owners, we have a vision to fill, but we don't necessarily know how to go about that. So I look for people who just have something new to bring to the table. And as far as illustration, let me think about how I feel about that. Number one, nobody submits anything to me, illustration-wise. Nobody. It's not like the days, you know, back in the day when, and maybe it's because I'm not at a magazine. And I use a ton of illustration. That's one of the things I'm very proud of at Broadbase. We usually always provide an illustration option to our clients when we're working on any project. And so I've maintained great contacts with lots of illustrators, even though I'm not in magazines anymore. But when I was at magazines, I used to get postcards all the time, or mailers, flyers all the time. I don't get any anymore. The last one that I got is actually hanging on my wall right next to me, and it was from Hal Mayforth. And it's probably, if I look at the postmark, it's probably a couple years old. Yeah.
Now, are you getting increased email submissions or none at all?
I get a lot of email submissions, but quite honestly, I don't look at them. I delete them. Okay. That's not the way that I personally like to be approached. I like to receive it in the mail. I want to get something tactile in my hands that I can, just like Hal's postcard here, that I can tape up on the wall next to me, you know, because I admire it. And for me personally, that's how people stay top of mind. And maybe it's because I went through the illustrator search, you know, 25 years ago, and was looking through the annuals and the books that come out, and there was no email, and people had to mail you things. And I really miss that. Getting those packages, because it's so attention grabbing and fresh and personal.
If you had people mailing you stuff, how often would you feel comfortable with them keeping in touch, whether it be with, you know, a one-page newsletter, like a physical newsletter, not an email necessarily newsletter, but just something to keep you up to date what they're doing, a postcard, and, you know, the mix, you know, what kind of mix would you be comfortable with?
I'd like to see, you know, I wouldn't mind having something once a month from people. you know, the difference between receiving a mailer and getting an email, people can make the email personal by saying, hi, Jan, you know, here's some new stuff that I wanted you to see. But then there's the pressure of feeling like you need to respond, mm-hmm. you know. I don't want that pressure. Like I said, I love receiving things in the mail. The only other thing, I'm looking around my office, the only other thing I have up on the wall is also from Hal Mayforth. And it's his annual calendar that he sends out. So really, I mean, and photographers are the same way. I don't get anything in the mail from photographers anymore either. I don't understand why that is. Like with technology, you know, it makes it faster, but is it effective? Is it more effective? I don't know about that. I'd have to argue that.
Yeah, we've spoken about that before, Bob and I.
Yeah. No, I think it's really nice to get this point of view from an illustrator standpoint, you know, because, you know, half the time we spend struggling figuring out how to contact people or what the best way to reach them is. I mean, you know, everybody's got a different preference, obviously, but, you know, to hear that, you know, that mail for you in particular is something that you prefer really kind of, I think is going to be an eye-opener for a lot of our listeners.
You know, I also prefer to get resumes in the mail. There's just so much email. I get 150 emails a day, you know.
It's a lot to go through, right.
And, you know, I'll print them out and put them in a stack, you know, and hope that I can respond, which I can't always or don't always. They just become too stale and I never get back to it. But I have the same conversation actually pretty regularly with people that younger people that are looking for ways to get employed, how to get the employer's attention. I'm like, good God, pick up the phone.
It's funny, you know, email is so convenient, it's no longer convenient.
It's, you know, I really think that it's that we're seeing a cycle where I hope people are going to get back to the basics.
Yeah.
And really, you know, mail things to people. If you want to stand out in a crowd, send me a piece of mail, because I get 150 emails a day, but I only get two pieces of mail, real mail.
And you know what helps with the mail thing is if you attach a $50 bill to it.
Well, it's definitely, you know, I used to maintain Illustrator files. I had an entire filing cabinet full of promos that illustrators would mail me. And it was, you know, the filing cabinet was organized by name and genre. And when I needed to find somebody, I'd go through that cabinet. And I, you know, because it was, I liked doing business with people that you know, or doing people that you like, just the same as anything. And I wanted to call the people that I knew first.
Right. So it's about developing relationships as well.
The same with anything in business. You know, if you want to get, as I grow my business, it's all about me being out there and meeting people and shaking hands and introducing myself. And I told myself a couple of years ago, I was tired of losing business to people that would say, oh, my boss knows this guy that lives next door. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to make a goal to meet all 1 million people in this in this market, so that they all know me too. You know?
So Jan was at all the happy hours daily.
That's a great idea.
And next to the bar, you're going to meet everybody.
Right. Yeah, you got to get out.
Mm-hmm. With email now, I think it people find it very easy to kind of hide behind their computer, and it's like there's a farther distance between them and the person they're trying to contact, so that if nothing happens, it doesn't feel so directly like a rejection.
Yeah.
As opposed to calling someone.
Well, not to mention that you can send out a blanket email and cover, you know, 100 people at the same time.
Right.
It's the personal touch that really makes the difference, I think, unless you just get lucky. But it's also, I see the same thing in people that send me resumes. And it doesn't matter how seasoned they are. It could be somebody who just graduated college, or it could be somebody who has been in the business 20 or 30 years. What happens is I get an email and it says, you know, hi, I saw your business online and I think I'd be a great fit for you and blah, 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 blah. And I've done all these wonderful things and here's my resume and I look forward to hearing back from you. Well, guess what? You're not going to hear back from me. No, if you went to the trouble to send me an email, you can find my phone number on the exact same place you found the email.
That's a good point.
That's a good point.
So you need to reach out and be a little more personal and take the time to get to know people. You know, it's important.
I think from a marketing standpoint that you would find a higher success rate in that. You know, if somebody was to do a little test, you know, go ahead, send out 100 emails and see what your response rate is. What would it be? 1%? What are you expecting? 0.5%? And then send out 100 postcards and follow it up with a phone call and see what that percentage is. I'll bet it's a lot higher.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The math will definitely work out. It may cost more upfront to send out those postcards and the postage, and maybe a little more time consuming, but the conversion on that is going to work out in your favor in the long run. And then you figure too, like, you know, the client value, you know, it's not just that one job you might get. I mean, Jan, you and I worked together for, I think, a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So it's the client value over, you know, the long haul.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I have my core group of guys that I still work with, you know, my go-to guys for lots of our projects, because they stay in touch with me. Top of mind.
There you go. That's right. Guys. That's right.
Yeah. That's a writer downer.
We'll call that a DBS moment.
All right, Jan. So getting back to to how you started real quickly, did you find you have to have like systems in place in your business in order to kind of bring people in? Like, I know for my stuff, I find it very difficult to kind of organize myself in a way that setting up a system where I can bring someone else in and they know what's going on.
Yeah. You know, I see people struggle with this all the time, and I see my senior art director struggle with it. You know, when we bring in new interns or freelance designers, because we use a lot of freelance in the office. And you have to understand when you bring somebody new in that you are going to invest a lot of time in training them. And you have to get rid of this mentality that it's quicker if I just do it myself. It may be quicker if you do it yourself, but in the long run, the person working with you still isn't going to know how to do it. And you're going to have to teach them at some point. And if you're not a patient person and willing to invest in training somebody, that person will probably get very frustrated with you and leave. So it's a commitment when you bring somebody in to showing them your processes and to know that you're going to be working a lot harder than you would doing it yourself. But as you said, it's a long-term investment and it will pay off in the end. So you just have to, you know, slow down and know that it's going to happen and show people exactly what your process is so that they can continue to offer the same deliverable that you do, you know, at the same quality level. They have to know how you're doing it in order to be as successful as you at it.
So basically, in order to grow your business, you need to invest in it in time and resources. There's no two ways about it.
There's no way around it. You can't bring somebody on and expect them to do what you do without them going through your own personal boot camp.
And it takes a vision of where you're going. I mean, like you mentioned before, you have to have the math in place and know how you're going to be growing your business so that you feel comfortable making these hires.
And I'm thinking mainly on the creative side. Now, sure, I can bring in a bookkeeper, you know, and or a writer, and it can be a lot easier, you know, to bring those people on because there's something that's just so personal about the design that it's if your clients are used to expecting are used to receiving things in one manner, and then all of a sudden it switches up and they're like, hey, you're not doing this anymore. Who's doing this? This isn't your work. That's the last thing you want to hear from them.
Well, I guess too, when you're creating a business like yours, I mean, you have to go, like in freelancing, you're selling yourself. And then when you develop a business, you go from selling yourself to selling the business itself, right? So that you're able to pull yourself out of the equation. I always go back to people I've known like that have owned like dance studios or something where they're like the instructor for mm-hmm. dance or whatever. Mm-hmm. And people go there because of them. But, you know, then what happens is when they try to bring other people in, they don't want to be taught by the other people. They want to be taught by the original owner.
Right.
And what they have to do is kind of sell the studio, not sell themselves. Did you find that to be somewhat true with you as well, that you had to sell broad-based communications and kind of pull yourself back a little bit?
You know, well, back when I started, you know, Jan's House Art, broad-based as one person, it was because it was just me. It was simple to be consistent, but and I was the designer. I was the everything. But as the business has continued to grow and evolve, I first had to take one foot out of the studio to run my business. It was my job to run the business and that was a really difficult transition to make because I'm a designer. And then eventually I had to take the second foot out of the studio. So now I don't do any design. Very, very rarely, although my senior guy was just in Spain for 2 weeks, and boy, let me tell you, I brushed up on some InDesign.
It's like riding a bike, though, once you know.
Oh,
never
God.
Forget.
It was fun, and I'm happy to say I was able to, you know, get everything finished that needed to get finished. But now, you know, you have to develop, over time, you will develop a process. And the process is very important. Clients want to know that you have a process. That's probably the most valuable thing that I've learned over the years, that as long as there's a process in place that ensures the deliverable will be consistent, the client really doesn't mind who's actually working on it. So it doesn't have to be me anymore because they know that I'm going to keep an eye on it. And I've built a culture in which our design solutions are consistent with one another. So there are no surprises. And as I've gone through, you know, I've made a lot of good hires over the years and I've made some bad ones. And the people that didn't fit just had to go.
Yeah, and having that uncomfortable conversation of letting someone go is probably, in a way, maybe feeds into the resistance that many of us have in hiring people to begin with, if they don't work out. And that could be like a whole other topic for another time. But speaking of going, we know that you have to go, Jan, and our time is limited together this morning. So, Jan, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to share your experience with our audience. I know I've learned a lot from this discussion. And it was just great speaking with you again. You were phenomenal. You were great. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That was really some excellent information. I hope our listeners had a little pen and a pencil with a pad of paper next to them writing down some of this stuff because it was really valuable information. Thank you so much.
And I'm looking forward to getting a lot of mail. Well,
you will. Well, I bet you'll get some. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Send it all to Jan.
Don't forget to attach a $50 bill.
All right, Jan, so if people want to flood your mailbox and not your inbox with samples of their work, where do they send it to?
They would send it to Jan Korb at Broadbased Communications, 1301 River Place Boulevard, Suite 1830, and that is in beautiful Jacksonville, Florida, 32207. And that's Korb with a K, by the way, K-O-R-B.
Okay, and your website?
www.bbased.com. That's two B's, A, S as in Sam, ED.com.
And if they want to follow you on Twitter?
Ooh, at Jan Korb.
Excellent. There you go.
And she's not giving out her email address.
That you'll have to do a little research on, but it's also findable.
And maybe a personal schedule of all those pubs you visit during the week for all those business connections. All right, guys, that's it for today. This is Carlos Castellanos of Drawn by Success with my buddy Bob Ostrom and our guest Jan Korb of Broadbased Communications.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Great conversation.
See you guys next time. This is why we do a lot of editing, because we work half-assed backwards and
remember things at the end and beginning.
Because we don't have a system in place.